good morning. It is a minute before 11 a.m. Coming up at 11, it's Health Watch. Today, host Ellen Goldsmith speaks with Dr. Peter Levine, author of Trauma and Memory, Brain and Body in Search for a Living Past. And at 11:30, Roberta Hall hosts Health and Healthcare Forum. She speaks with John Hoffer and Hong Lee, ethicist at Salem Hospital, about ethical issues in the hospital. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support. You're keeping the station going, keeping us on the air. If you're not a member or if you want to renew, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate Today. You are tuned to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Hats for the Homeless donation drive. From now through December 15th, Fire on the Mountain on 57th and Northeast Fremont, Los Gorditos at 12th and Southeast Division, Mike's Drive-In in Selwood, The Cup and Saucer on Northeast Killingsworth, and the Old Salt Supper House on Northeast 42nd Avenue will collect clean, new, or gently used hats, scarves, and gloves, and the folks at Zippity News will distribute them to local shelters. Dropbox locations and more information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from PBP Insurance, working to assist individuals throughout Oregon with open enrollment process through healthcare.gov. Information on how PBP Insurance can help is available at 503-223-3638 or enrollnoworegon.com.
The purpose of this program is not to prescribe a treatment to individuals. Listeners should consult their healthcare practitioner before attempting any treatment.
Good morning and welcome to Health Watch. I'm Ellen Goldsmith, your host. Today, I'm glad to be speaking with Dr. Peter Levine about his recent book, Trauma and Memory, Brain and Body in a Search for the Living Past, a practical guide for understanding and working with traumatic memory. Dr. Peter Levine holds doctorates in both psychology and medical biophysics. He has worked in the field of stress and trauma for over 40 years and is the developer of Somatic Experiencing, a body awareness approach to healing trauma. Peter's original contribution to the field of body psychotherapy was honored in 2010 when he received the Lifetime Achievement Award from the United States Association for Body Psychotherapy. Dr. Levine has been a stress consultant for NASA in the development of the first space shuttle project and was a member of the Institute of World Affairs Task Force project with Psychologists for Social Responsibility in developing responses to large-scale disasters and ethno-political warfare. Peter Levine is the author of the best-selling book, Waking the Tiger, Healing Trauma, which has been published in 24 languages, as well as many other significant books he has written on trauma. Dr. Peter Levine, welcome to Health Watch.
Thank you. Morning.
Good morning. So I wanted to start with you talking about the important connection so that people can understand about the connection between trauma and memory.
Yeah. What many people don't understand, actually many therapists don't understand, but many lay folks don't understand, there are very different kinds of memory. And broadly speaking, they're divided, can be divided into explicit and implicit. The explicit are the memories, are the more conscious memories, and the implicit are the least conscious memories. And the two forms of explicit memory are declarative and episodic. And declarative is kind of the laundry list or the shopping list. You know, you go to the store and you have a list in your mind of what you need to get. You can recall it deliberately. These are sometimes called semantic memory, and they're devoid of any feelings or emotions. They're just factual. Then we have episodic memories as we go to a less conscious direction. And episodic memories are little vignettes from our life that somehow encapsulate the essence of a period in our lives. I can give you a quick example. When I was in the fifth grade, I was walking home from my first day in class. I had a new teacher, and I was with some friends, and I would be moaning that this is the worst teacher I've ever had, and I had very bad teachers. And at that moment, I had a tap on my right shoulder, and I looked around, and it was Mrs. Kurtz. And she said, "Well, am I really that bad?" And, of course, I had a gut-twisting feeling at the time, but as I reflect back on it, as I sort of drift with it, it really was a turning point in my life where I went from having information shoved down me to down my throat to someone who really guided me to learning. And so this really encapsulated this whole change, even though I don't really remember anything else about that year, that kind of gave a feeling of what things were like for me and how they changed. And this is a little bit also like Prost wrote in his book Remembrance of Things Past. He dipped a madeleine, a pastry, in his tea, and then in that moment he was transported to walking the streets where he grew up as a child. Then we have the least conscious memories, and these are emotional memories. Seemingly out of the blue, we're feeling very angry or sad, and we don't even necessarily know what triggered it. It's just there. It just pops up. And then the most deepest, least conscious memories, and the ones that have actually the most effect on us, are the so-called procedural or body memories. And these are things that the body has learned to do. So they include skills like riding a bike, skiing, dancing, so forth. And they also include what are called valences of approach or avoidance, of positive and negative. So we may be attracted to somebody for reasons that we're not consciously aware of, but we feel drawn to them. Or another person we may just want to avoid. These are also body memories, procedural memories. Then finally, we have the procedural memories that have to do with survival, that have to do with stiffening, retracting, fighting, fleeing, folding, collapsing. And the problem is when we've become traumatized, these memories, particularly those actions that have failed us in the past, now become sort of almost a default. So all of a sudden, without even knowing why, we meet somebody and our gut twists. And these are memories. They are memories just as much as any other kind of memory. It's just that they're not conscious. So we can talk about the declarative memories and even reminisce about episodic memories. Emotional memories are hot. Procedural memories are, in a way, like the tides. We can think of you're looking out at the ocean as I am right now, and I see the white caps because it's quite windy, and they grab my attention. But of course, there are the waves, and then if you were to go swimming, which I wouldn't want to go today, then you would find that the currents are even much stronger than the waves. And if you're not a good swimmer, you could really get in trouble. And then there are the tides. And we don't really even notice the tides unless we're sitting there for a long period of time and observing. So the explicit memories we can talk about with words. The procedural memories we can contact and talk about in terms of our body sensations. And that's the key in working with those kind of memories, is to work with become aware with and learn how to work with our bodily sensations.
So in people who have suffered trauma, especially veterans or people who have been witness to horrible acts of violence, you describe these procedural memories as like the impulses, movements, and internal body sensations that guide us through the how-to of our various actions, skills, attractions, and repulsions. What happens to those procedural memories with trauma? Are they broken? Do they come forward in a new way that is kind of beyond one's conscious control, so to speak?
Indeed. Key word would be stuck. I'm going to answer it in one word. Or actually incomplete. So if we're in a situation where we're attacked by somebody, our body mobilizes a whole series of possible defenses, of actions that can defend ourselves. This, of course, becomes much more complicated if the person who is the injured person is also the person who's supposed to be loving and taking care of us. But just speaking initially of the first case, so we try to defend ourselves, we succumb, we are overwhelmed. But what happens is these responses that were preparing us to defend ourselves, that they need to complete.
Right.
And as they complete, then we move from the procedural memories through emotional, episodic, and then we're even able to make a narrative. We're able to tell a story about ourselves. And in a way, it's our hero's journeys. It's our mythology, and I mean that not at all in a negative sense, in a positive sense. It's about who we are, how we become formed, and how we dealt with times where we were overwhelmed, and also appreciating and understanding that we have the resources, the capabilities to respond differently now. So it's important that we are able to learn from the past and then to create a future which is different than the past.
Absolutely.
So if you're traumatized...
Go ahead, yeah.
If you're traumatized, you can't really imagine a future different than the past. We're talking about veterans. During the 70s and 80s, I did a lot of work with Vietnam vets. And then now here in the Iraq and Afghanistan with vets from that war. And there were so many people that I worked with that they were blown up with these explosive devices. And their body is like a frozen moment. It's as though they're trying to orient towards the source of the blast. Like all the muscles in the front of their body contract around the guts to kind of make a smaller target. And they stay in that position. And because of that, they have developed lots of different kinds of symptoms. There's a documentary people can view. It's on YouTube. Just go... Peter Levine worked with Iraq vet, with Ray, Iraq vet. I think that should take to that. Where I worked with a soldier who was blown up by two IEDs and also had a lot of emotional memories having to do with his survivor's guilt and his grief and his loss, his rage and his grief and his loss, and how he's able to contain them, to contact them, to have compassion for himself and for its others, and then to be able to make the transition from a nervous system that's prepared for war to a nervous system that's prepared to raise a family, to have a child and raise a family. So we really have to, again, change these early procedural memories, because if we don't, we can understand what's happening to us. We can even have emotional reactions. But until we change what our body does, we'll continue to recreate the original trauma.
In case you just tuned in and are listening to Health Watch on KABU, we are speaking with Dr. Peter Levine, author of the book Trauma and Memory, Brain and Body in a Search for the Living Past. So this traumatic action of survival that the body takes on when they are faced with tremendous trauma, then gets stuck in the body. And then there's a story that you told about Ray, and working with him was quite moving, to see him go from someone who's quite shut down and had what they diagnosed as Tourette's syndrome, really starting to see that really as his natural reaction to try to protect himself, or as you said, orient himself. Can you talk about how you start to work with these kinds of trauma, really from the ground up, from the body up, because this is a very different approach than most people take to working with trauma and post-traumatic stress.
That's right. This is a bottom-up approach. Most approaches have been cognitive, to try to control your behaviors or to become aware of your thoughts, which can be important, but it's only the very tip of the iceberg of what happens to us in trauma. And with Ray, whose session I show with pictures in the book, and also of a baby, a 14-month-old
yes.
baby who had severe birth trauma. And, of course, he doesn't have any kind of explicit memory at all. And you see how clearly his body undoes the trauma of his birth, and he renegotiates it and finds new power and agency, and then for the first time is able to really connect to mold and to bond to his mother. Now, I can't explain things to him, but with Ray, again, when you see him exactly the way he described, he's looking down, he's looking away, he's averting any kind of eye contact, and his body goes through a whole series of twitches. So he was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder, traumatic brain injury, depression, anxiety, chronic pain, and Tourette's. But as you correctly observed, the Tourette's diagnosis really was a misunderstanding of what his body was trying to do to protect himself. And when he could go through that and complete that, you know, after the first session, you see that the convulsions are 80% gone.
Right.
And again, it's something that you couldn't get through cognitively, you couldn't get to emotionally, but you had to be able to contact the body and let the body unfold and return to the wisdom of the body.
So I can imagine, you know, people who may be listening are feeling, oh, yes, I want this, you know, I want to come back to my myself, my free, open, enlivened self. And, you know, it's kind of like, do you try this at home? You know, how can people start to actually, you know, what would be the method that you work with in somatic experiencing to help people really unwind these traumas in the body that exist at such a deep procedural memory, as you
sure,
describe it?
Sure. Well, when we've been become traumatized, the last thing we want to do is to feel our bodies.
Right.
Because that seems like we'll be overwhelmed again. And we feel maybe even betrayed by our bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And so the key here is learning how to just touch into the body very briefly. I call this titration, just one small bit at a time, so that you find that, yes, when you feel your body, for some moments, things feel worse because you haven't been feeling your body before.
And that must be difficult to even take or stand that strong feeling, correct?
That's right. It is difficult, but with guidance,
mm-hmm.
and that's really the method of somatic experiencing is based upon, is helping to guide people so they can find parts of their body that are not traumatized. And let me give you an example. Actually, this is something that your listeners can do. We can all do together.
Great.
Take a look at your hand, your open hand. Okay, just
okay.
Look at it. Now, close your hand into a fist. Just look at that. Now, open it again to an outstretched hand, an open hand, and then again, close it into a fist. This time, do it a little bit more slowly, and notice how it feels when you open your fingers, and how does it actually feel physically as you close your fingers into a fist. Now, just for a moment, if you feel comfortable enough, close your eyes and feel your hand when it's open. And just feel your hand as it closes into a fist. Feel the tightness, the power in the fist, and feel the openness and the receptivity in the hand. It's a very simple exercise. It just took a couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
But that could be one step in helping the person discover, oh, maybe I don't have to be terrified of my body. You know, it's like what happens is when these sensations come up, because we haven't experienced them, or at the time we experienced them, they were overwhelming, particularly if we experience them as children. So what we learn to do is push these feelings down. And there's an expression, I suspect it's probably from AA, that which we resist persists. So we try to push the sensations and the feelings down, but then they push up even harder because we're pushing against them. And so then it seems like no matter what, if we ever feel them, we'll be completely obliterated, we'll be decimated. But really what's happening is we're experiencing how much our resistance is. So when we can gradually open into our resistance, like opening from the fist into the hand, we start to actually feel pleasurable feelings, feel the empowering feelings. And from that platform, we're able to gradually touch into the sensations that are the more trauma-based.
So,
go ahead.
So, you know, this is such a different approach, you know, because you're not going directly into the trauma. But it sounds like, I mean, even as I did that exercise here in the studio, you know, I noticed the sensation in my hand and the temperature. But what I really noticed was I took a deep breath, which, of course, brings you into the body, correct?
That's correct. That's correct. And that's what people notice. All of a sudden, for no apparent reason, they notice something else. Maybe they notice tingling. Maybe they notice what you experienced, a spontaneous breath. Maybe they feel some sense of power or anger. Maybe they feel some sense of sadness or yearning. And the body has its own language. It has its own language, and it's a language which is perennially, unbelievably intelligent.
Right. So you're actually giving people the opportunity to re-experience their capacity in very small, small, small steps, right?
Yes.
And that is you
then
build
I would
capacity.
Add one more small. Exactly.
An extra small, too. Okay.
An extra small. It's a very gentle process, mostly.
Yes.
You know, and I mean, sometimes people have strong emotional responses. That happens. But it's the key in somatic experiencing is to help the person build a bigger container. And the container for our feelings is our body. The feelings are registered in the body. In the late 1800s, William James was right when he said that we're not afraid because we're running. We're not afraid and run away from a bear. We're afraid because we're running away from a bear. Well, that's not quite right. We're afraid. But the idea is that all of our feelings really are registered in the body. The neurologist, very well-known neurologist, Antonio Damasio, in his several books, has come to exactly the same conclusion. And so if our body is all tight and braced against our sensations and feelings, they seem even bigger than they are. So as we kind of open into the body, then all of gradually the emotions and sensations that seem like they had overwhelmed us, they seem manageable or even interesting or even pleasant or pleasurable.
Well, interesting, I'm sorry. You know, interesting seems to be the key word because you talk a lot about this capacity to develop the skill for observation, for noticing prior to something overtaking us. You know, especially with deep traumatic, we hear these stories of vets who, you know, just can't sleep, and the rage and the depression and the you know, the rage against oneself as, you know, suicide, etc., is so profound. But you know, you talk about building this capacity as the capacity also to step away from it a little bit. Is that correct?
Yes, to be able to observe it.
Yes.
You know what happens when people become traumatized is instead of having sensations and emotions, they become those emotions. They're not able to separate and observe them. And so what we need to do is bring the prefrontal part of our brain online. That's the observing part of our brain. Now, what's really interesting is that this part of the brain, the medial prefrontal cortex, through the structure called the cingulate and the insula, gets its input from our internal body sensations. So, Joseph Ledoux has shown that the only part of the brain that can really temper our emergency responses, our amygdala, our smoke detectors for danger, is the prefrontal cortex. So through body sensations, it really helps bring the observing part of our brain online so we can stand back and say, oh, I'm feeling a tightness in my gut. Ah, and I notice the tightness starts to change. And now I feel warmth and tingling in my fingertips. Yogi Berra said it when he said that you can observe a lot just by looking,
right?
Just by watching, just by observing,
right?
And in Kansas, you know what they say about curiosity?
No, what do they say?
Well, they say curiosity led the cat to realizing its own highest potential.
I never heard that.
Yeah, well, always a new one.
Yes.
But this ability to have somewhat of an open, inviting, even curious stance to what's going on with us is the opposite of what's happened in trauma. And when people do that, they are able to come into flow. And when you're in flow, you can't feel you can't be in the grips of trauma. They can't coexist.
Right.
In the nervous system.
So when we see this even in people's physical health and well-being, because I work with patients as an acupuncturist, you know, we know a lot of people go to the doctor and they have problems and the doctors will say, well, it's all in your head, or it's just all in your body. You know, there's a symptom that has to be, you know, quelled. And in psychotherapy too, we don't have this habit of connecting to the body. You know, connecting sensation and thought, and
yeah, right.
It's a new skill, isn't it?
It's a new skill, but it's also a very, very, very old
yes.
skill. You know, we live in a Western culture in general. It's the mind that is the preeminent,
right?
And the mind kind of controls the body. Now we can't blame it on Descartes, but he really stated the philosophy of the time when he said, I think, therefore I am. Rather, I sense, I feel, I observe, and therefore I am. From my read of history around the late Egyptian, early Greek period, that there was much greater embodiment. I think I see that in the art and in the sculpture.
Yes.
And I think I've visited and spent time in various indigenous cultures throughout the world. And there the people really are in their bodies in the sense that an animal is.
Right.
And they are aware of it, and they know what to do and what not to do, where to go and what not to go, where there might be danger, where there might be a source of food, by getting their body signals. You know the expression gut, what's it called?
Gut instinct?
Gut instinct.
Right.
That really is absolutely true. When people learn to connect with their bodies, not only their guts, but their whole bodies, they find that they're learning things about themselves and about the world that they hadn't been able to do without those tools.
Absolutely.
With our deep selves.
Right. Dr. Levine, we're just about out of time, and I just I could speak with you for hours about this. It's so fascinating and rich, and I think what you've brought forward in the book and in your work is that there really is hope to heal trauma, and that the way through it is at our fingertips or within us,
yep.
et cetera.
Yep, that's right.
Definitely. So yeah. I would love to give people the opportunity to learn more about your work and just where to contact you. People, of course, can buy your book on Amazon. So if you could just give people the name of your website, that would be fantastic.
Sure. I just want to say one thing quickly. Trauma is a fact of life, but it doesn't have to be a life sentence. The website, it's the traumahealing.org. and you can go there for resources and for referrals, therapist referrals,
okay,
for training information.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr.
Ellen.
Peter Levine.
Good to meet you.
Thank you for being with us on Health Watch today.
Okay. Take you care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you to all of our new and renewing members during our winter membership drive. That makes KBOO one of the best community radio stations in the country. We fell a few thousand short of our goal of 55,000, so if you didn't have a chance to give, it's never too late. Remember, for the month of December, if you become a new member or if you increase your giving over last year, your gift will be matched by a number of local businesses and individual donors. Donate now at kboo.fm/give. Thank you once again for being the best supporters a station could ever ask for.
Welcome to the Health and Healthcare Forum. I'm Roberta Hall. In these programs, we present new information or new insights about old and new health issues. We consider everything from community efforts to improve and extend healthcare to all people, to environmental issues that threaten us all, and to discussions with those individuals and their ideas that can move us forward in the